Welcome to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Meredith DeFrancesco and Amy Brown for October 17, 2002. 2 years later, New England social justice activist Camille Viveras is still awaiting his day in court following the mass arrests at the Republican National Convention protests. But first, this news. Where are the jobs is the questions workers, unions, and community organizations, including Unite President Bruce Rayner, will be asking in the statewide Where Are the Jobs rally and trade caravan tour on this Friday, October 18th and Saturday the 19th. Thousands of jobs have been lost in Maine directly and indirectly due to the shutdown of manufacturing plants when businesses relocate out of the country to take advantage of lower wages, repressed union organizing, and the lack of environmental enforcement, a phenomenon perpetuated by so-called free trade agreements. Hathaway Shirts Company has made its final decision to close its Waterville plant, though it will continue production overseas, keeping the same label. Almost 300 people will lose their jobs. On Friday, the caravan will start at 5 a.m. in Millinocket at Great Northern Paper. At 2 p.m., there will be a Where Are the Jobs rally in Bangor at the Federal Building. On Sunday, there will be a 9 a.m. rally in Waterville at the Hathaway Shirt Company before the caravan travels to Portland for a 12:30 rally at Monument Square. For more information, you can contact Jack McKay at 989-4141 or email jmckay@cs.com or Barbara Nicole Hiltz at 622-3151 or email her at blnicole, N-I-C-C-O-L-I, at compuserve.com.
According to today's Bangor Daily News, George Bush is going to be in Bangor next Tuesday at a Republican rally. He's scheduled to be at Hangar 12 at the Bangor International Airport next Tuesday at 6 p.m. The newspapers report that the Republicans are expecting people from all corners of Maine to attend the rally. Again, that's George Bush at a Republican rally next Tuesday at 6 at the Bangor International Airport, Hangar 12. The Peace and Justice Center in Bangor, in conjunction with Veterans for Peace, are making plans to greet him. For more information, call 942-9343.
On October 26th, thousands of people will gather across the country and internationally to rally against the Bush administration's threatened war on Iraq. In conjunction with these protests, there will be a march on the main state house in Augusta, followed by speakers and musicians. Mara Verhaden Hilliard, a member of ANSWER, who is involved in organizing the mass protests in San Francisco and Washington, D.C., said, quote, "There has never before been a war with such massive organized opposition taking place before it started. Everywhere Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld go, they have been met with demonstrations and disruptions, a phenomenon that has only begun to occur at the height of the Vietnam War. Elected officials are reporting the phone calls against the war are running 300 to 1. Anti-war sentiment is now crystallizing into mass actions with demonstrations, protests, and sit-ins," end quote. As yesterday Bush signed the congressional resolution authorizing war against Iraq, Maine organizers hope that residents of this state will vote with their feet and come in numbers to make their dissent heard. One organizer said, quote, "Bring your silence, bring your noise, bring whatever is in your heart." He said that this demonstration is about the war and how this country is using violence to problem solve. There will be a bus from Bangor to Augusta leaving at 10 a.m. Reservations should be made by tomorrow by calling the Bangor Peace and Justice Center at 942-9343. The march will begin at noon at the Bucher School across the street from the National Guard Armory on Western Ave. The march will proceed to the State House. A rally of speakers, including Tom Jackson of Voices in the Wilderness and Bob Bontheus, co-founder of Witness for Peace, and musicians will conglomerate at 1:30 at the Capitol.
To myself, I saw my reflection in a window and didn't know my own face. Oh brother, are you gonna leave me wasting away on the streets of Philadelphia?
In In August of 2000, the city of Philadelphia hosted the Republican National Convention. Aware that the convention would draw thousands of protesters and no doubt taking the city's police department's track record into consideration, the Republican host committee brought an insurance policy that protected them for up to $3 million against lawsuits stemming from claims of false imprisonment, wrongful detention, malicious prosecution, assault and battery, discrimination, violation of property and civil rights, and wrongful eviction or wrongful entry. As the wealthy elite gathered at the convention center, the streets of Philadelphia were filled with thousands of people speaking up for social justice and environmental issues, hoping to garner even a fraction of the corporate media coverage for their message. Several days of teach-ins, marches, and rallies were held, culminating in mass demonstrations to be held the afternoon of August 1st. By mid-morning, sirens could be heard throughout the city. A warehouse that was being used to make puppets for the parade was surrounded by police and all the occupants arrested. The police claimed that they suspected that dangerous activities were taking place inside, but no evidence of that was ever found. Elsewhere in the city, people the police thought were organizers, sometimes apparently because they were using cell phones, were rounded up and arrested. There were mass arrests at several locations around the city where people had gathered to protest. By the end of the day, 420 people had been arrested. Many spent 5 or more hours handcuffed in buses without air conditioning, with the windows open only a few inches and without water. Once in the jail, people were held for several days without being allowed to make phone calls or talk with their attorneys. Cells were severely overcrowded. Some people were handcuffed wrist to ankle. Some were dragged naked through the cell block and banged into walls and furniture by the guards. Requests for medical attention were denied. The number and severity of offenses that those arrested were charged with stunned seasoned activists and civil rights lawyers, as did the bail, set as high as $1 million for John Sellers of the Ruckus Society and Kate Sorensen, an AIDS activist. Over the course of the past 2 years, almost every charge has been dismissed or dropped. Civil suits have been filed by some of the people arrested. In response, the lawyers hired by the company that sold the insurance policy have resorted to tactics such as subpoenaing activists' computer hard drives, address books, and tax returns, and have even asked to depose at least one attorney, saying that he was enmeshed with the activists. Deposing counsel is a tactic that civil rights lawyers say was last commonly used against lawyers who dared represent those accused of being communists in the 1950s. In the midst of all of this, there are still three people who were arrested in Philadelphia on that day in August 2000 who have yet to go to trial. Known as the Timoney Three, they have been accused of assaulting then-Police Chief John Timoney, charges which they deny, and they face up to 50 years in jail. This is a case that seems to be based entirely on police eyewitness accounts. Coincidentally, John Timoney, who now works for a private security company, was on Newsnight on CNN last night talking about the unreliability of eyewitness testimony. One of the so-called Timoney Three is Camille Viveris, currently of Rhode Island. Camille is well known to many here in Maine as he's worked closely with them on environmental and social justice issues. People who know Camille describe him as a gentle, thoughtful, and committed person who's dedicated to helping others in his community. Many have expressed concerns that the city of Philadelphia, frustrated by the lack of convictions thus far, will scapegoat Camille and his co-defendants. Joining us by phone today from Rhode Island is Mimi Budnick, Camille's longtime friend. Mimi is also involved with the Providence branch of the group Friends of Camille, which has branches in Boston and Philadelphia as well. Welcome, Mimi.
Hi, how you doing? Thank you for inviting me on the show today.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Mimi, we know that there are some things that you can't say about the defense because this case still hasn't gone to court. It was supposed to go this month, and now it's been pushed back to next February. But what can you tell us about Camille and why he was in Philadelphia that day?
Yep. Well, as you mentioned, Camille's been a long-term activist and organizer for social justice. He was in Philadelphia on that day along with thousands of other people from across the country. The particular day that he was arrested was a march that was organized day of protests and actions that was organized to bring attention to the lack of justice in the criminal justice system. And it's just ironic that on that particular day, it's changed the course of events for his life. For, you know, the past 2 years, he's been caught up in a web of fighting and dealing with all the things that that day was meant to highlight in terms of police brutality, the injustice of the courts, the way that people are targeted, the lack of free speech, the long waiting periods that Camille's going through to even face his trial are, you know, not rare at all. They're something that people experience all the time. Camille's lucky enough to be out on bail with the help of hundreds of our friends raising money, but lots of other people aren't that, you know, aren't that fortunate, and they wait as long as Camille's been waiting to go to trial, but from inside the prison.
Right, right, and sometimes with less attention.
Yeah, a lot less attention.
So,
yeah.
So can you say anything at all about what was happening that day? And I know that in the fracas that Camille actually was assaulted, that he suffered some injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a little bit. I wasn't there myself, so this is all secondhand knowledge for me. But on that day, there were a series of marches, some protests in standing locations. There was a large gathering of people that was outside of City Hall in Philadelphia, and the police were starting to move in and arrest people. And people that didn't want to get arrested, kind of spontaneously, started going down another street on a march. Chanting slogans about, anti-police brutality, against the death penalty, free Mumia, the same kind of themes that were seen throughout the day. And it seemed like increasingly as the day went on, the cops got less and less patient, if you can say they were patient at all throughout the day, and more aggressive in their tactics, and began to really aggressively move in and corner people on that march. A lot of people were arrested and rounded up at that point. Camille was arrested at an intersection in Philadelphia, or near an intersection in Philadelphia, walking away from a scene where cops had moments before plowed into people with their bikes and were beating people. And as people ran away from the scene, Camille, was there in a lot of ways kind of walking away slowly to make sure that the people that were being beaten up by the cops weren't left alone, and was grabbed. He suffered a concussion through his arrest. His glasses were, fell off his face and were later stepped on by the cops and kicked into the gutter. He didn't receive medical care for over 4 days. He was in the prison before he saw a doctor. And then finally, because a lot of the other protesters were, worried about Camille, who was kind of fading in and out of consciousness throughout the time that he was there, the first few days, made enough of a stink that they brought him to the hospital just to say, oh, yeah, you have a concussion. And, ironically, the cops are saying that that's what Camille caused of one of the police that he supposedly injured.
It's also, I think, for people who aren't aware, Camille and his co-defendants in the charges is that that cops were hit with police bikes, and one of the tactics that police did use that day was to make blockades of roads themselves with their bikes, putting their bikes end to end with each other, and then shoving their bikes into protesters that were in the streets while yelling, "Get off my bike!"
Yeah. And also, I mean, the use of the bikes was strategic, and I think a lot of people have heard. Some people have been tricked by the PR that was done by the cops, and their whole strategy worked, that, like, they were a gentler police force on bikes rather than motorcycles or running into people with cars. But what they haven't publicized as much is the fact that they had months of training ahead of time about how to actually use those bikes as weapons. Mm. So, the cops were trained by bicycle experts in Philadelphia about how they could use those bikes strategically for the things like roadblocks and for, beating off protesters or plowing into them, like was seen over and over again throughout the day. So, yeah, again, and, I want to emphasize, as I did in the beginning, that, the charges and the tactics and ways that the cops are going about handling this case, although they're pretty heavy-handed in terms of protesters in recent years, their common things and themes and ways of police, you know, sort of flipping the script around. So Camille ended up with the concussion. They're saying that he caused the concussion. Camille and other people were plowed into by bikes, and they're saying that Camille used the bike as a weapon. So I think that they try a lot of times to just build a smokescreen and confuse people with facts that are quite often the opposite of reality.
Mm-hmm. On there's a website, the friendsofcamille.org website, and mm-hmm. on it, I counted as of last night, there were at least 48 letters of support, different people who know Camille from various work that he's done. And so he does have a lot of support, the group in three different cities organizing. What can you tell us about Camille and the people who are supporting him, what kind of work he does in the community? And
yeah. And a lot of people are writing back, writing letters of support, giving money, putting time and energy into the case because they personally know Camille. And for people that have met Camille, you know, it's hard for them to believe these charges could possibly be, you know, coming from the person that they know. People have described him as saint-like, gentle, one of the kindest, most compassionate people that they've ever met, soft-spoken. But I think a lot of people at this point are even writing letters that don't know Camille because they see this as an attack on somebody who is fighting for social justice and fighting for what they believe in a better world, and that resonates with them. And so at this point, we actually have collected hundreds of letters, and there have been campaigns to appeal to organizations on that level that don't know Camille and to emphasize the fact that Camille's being used as a scapegoat for everybody that was out there, and that this isn't just a case about an individual and his misfortune, but it's rather an attempt to portray protesters as violent, to legitimize the amount of excessive force that was used at that day, and to authorize the use of that type of force or more in the future. And people are starting to make that connection, that it's not just about Camille, it's about criminalizing protest and dissent.
Hmm. What can you tell us about the work that, I'm glad that you keep bringing this back to the more global picture, because that really is a point that needs to be made. Bringing it back, though, in terms of kind of rounding out the picture of who Camille is mm-hmm. for people who don't know him, sure. because I do think that kind of is clear in the letters that you read and the statements made by his supporters, how committed Camille is to the work that he does, and not just showing up at mass demonstrations, but also organizing and working with folks in the community.
Yep. Camille's current job is as an organizer for the Massachusetts Alliance of HUD Tenants, and he works to help elderly and disabled low-income tenants in public HUD housing fight against rent increases and evictions. And he's been doing that for the past 3 years. It's a position that he basically convinced the organization that they needed to fund because they didn't have anybody organizing in southeastern Mass. And southeastern Massachusetts, being within an hour's range of Boston, is, you know, being hit by waves of gentrification from people that are seeking more affordable housing outside of Boston. So it actually is a real crisis in some of the smaller cities outside of Boston. But one of the things about that job and about a lot of the other work Camille's done, he's been working on issues around housing for quite a while. He was one of the co-founders of Empty the Shelters, which attempted to build alliances between homeless individuals, students, and organizations that were working on homeless issues, and Homes Not Jails, which was talking about how all this funding is going into putting people in prison as opposed to keeping a roof above people's head in the free world. And the thing about all that work is that it stands in direct contrast to the kind of individual act that they're accusing Camille of. And mm-hmm. You know, all these other things emphasize making change by building collective power, and by building voices of people that'll stand together and move forward and raise their concerns in a nonviolent manner of confronting power through demonstrations, protests, things like that, not through individual glory-seeking acts of violence like he's being accused of. So it's actually, extremely contrary to the way that Camille has committed himself to going about his work for social change.
It's been pretty clear from some of what's been found in discovery with other people that have already gone to trial that the police were targeting certain people. I mean, there were mass arrests. 420 people were arrested pretty quickly that day. But there also were people that were picked out of the crowd and arrested. People, like I said earlier, some of whom were on cell phones, so they were thought to be organizers. But some, like Kate Sorensen and John Sellers, who were targeted because people knew who they were, the police knew who they were ahead of time. Is there any suspicion that perhaps Camille was someone who was specifically targeted because the police knew who he was?
Actually, not at all. I think that, Camille had nothing to do with the organizing for the event. He hasn't lived in Philly ever. He really wasn't tied into it at all. And, the type of work that he does in a lot of ways is out of the scope of what they're looking for, which is, I think, foolish on the parts of investigators, because organizing thousands of tenants to fight for their rights in some ways is a lot more of a threat to the establishment than some of these other more flashier, protests and activists that the police were kind of zooming in on. I really think that, Camille just happened to have been grabbed, and I don't think that they knew what was in store for them and how much support and how many people know Camille and how long he's been working and, building connections that are now paying off and the amount of people that are willing to step up to the plate and make sure that this doesn't happen.
What would you say to people who are hearing this story and are being intimidated, who are feeling what was quite possibly and quite probably the intent, which is to intimidate people who are wanting to express dissent?
Yeah, I think you're right that probably was the intent of it. I think that, people shouldn't be afraid and shouldn't let themselves be intimidated, because the only chance that we have of being able to fight something like this is when we all stand together. And the more that each of us opts not to do that or lets ourselves be scared and decide that we'd rather just protect ourselves, then it makes the people that are still willing to stand up and fight take more of a risk and more of a hit and be singled out. And, that's sort of the premise of doing good organizing work like Camille does, is that if you all stand together, you have a lot more power and a lot more strength than if you try to get something done as an individual. So I think absolutely that can't let them pick off individuals, and we have even more of an obligation if they're going to do stuff like this to be strong and let them know that it's not going to work.
Mimi, where can people get more information, and what can they do if they want to get involved or help out?
Yeah, the best place to kind of get an overall introduction to the case and some background history on the overall situation in Philadelphia, what happened during the Republican Convention, is at the website that you mentioned, which is friendsofcamille.org, and Camille is spelled C-A-M-I-L-O. And people can look at the types of letters of support that have come in. A lot of them are published there. Letters of support are a great thing that people can do. And like I said, people don't have to know Camille specifically to be able to write a good letter. You can write about how this kind of suppression of free speech, suppression and intimidation of people that are expressing dissent is unacceptable, how society needs people like Camille, and money shouldn't be spent on prosecuting, but rather people like Camille should be applauded and commended and encouraged to do the work that they're doing still. That's a big start. If people were in Philly during the Republican Convention and thinks that they might have stories to share that would be helpful to the defense about police brutality that they witnessed on the street, ways that they personally might have been handled by the police, they can write to the defense team's email at stayingstrong, and that's one word, at hotmail.com. And the letters of support, and also we're still raising money for defense costs and legal costs. As Amy was saying earlier, the bail had been set extremely high in these cases. Camille's original bail was set at $500,000. It was then dropped to $150,000, of which we had to post $15,000, which we miraculously pulled together, although the Philadelphia court system keeps up to 35% of that for court processing fees. So that's several thousands of dollars right there that we're going to lose. The legal fees for the lawyer have cost over $25,000 so far. We've been doing mailings, calling people. We'll be flying in witnesses from all over the country, so there's a real severe need for fundraising. So checks can be made out to Friends of Camille, the same as the website, and letters of support and checks can be mailed to Friends of Camille, P.O. Box 23169, Providence, Rhode Island, and the zip code is 02903.
Thank you very much. It's
Mimi. And again, when is that court date coming up now?
We actually don't have a court date yet. He was supposed to go on October 9th, and one of Camille's co-defendant's lawyers was still on another trial. We're waiting to hear the court date. We've heard anything from November to a date in February. So we're just asking people right now to be patient and to check the website periodically, and it'll be posted there when we know.
Great. Thanks. It's Mimi Budnick from Friends of Camille.
Between the lines, help your siblings everywhere to open up closed minds. Stand up to those who are to blame for crimes committed in our name. All you good Americans, things can't stay the same.
That's Robert Hoyt with Good Americans.
You've been listening to Radio Active, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown. We'd like to thank Joel Mann for engineering today, Andy Buckley for web support, and you for listening and acting.
You can contact us here at WERU or be emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com.
You can listen to archived Radioactive programs on the web at www.freespeech.org/RAN or at maineindymedia.org.
Please join us again next Thursday and stay tuned now for Free Speech Radio News and Democracy Now!